guys, it's Carly. Welcome back to Mostly Balanced. Today, we have a very exciting guest. We have Lucy Fink, who is a content creator, a mom, and she is recently a new podcast host of The Real Stuff. So I've been listening to your podcast. I listened to a few episodes last week. It's amazing. So I like to always start by having my guests tell everybody where they're from, where they are now, and a little bit about what they do.
Hi, Carly. Well, first of all, I'm so excited to be on your show. Thank you for inviting me. A little bit about me. I am 31 years old. I was a New York City resident right out of college. I went to Johns Hopkins University and moved to the city right away and lived there for just about 10 years as I started my media career. Probably my first and biggest job, it wasn't my actual first job, but my first real on-camera job was hosting YouTube content at Refinery29, where I had the chance to produce and host a bunch of their YouTube series and really use that opportunity to build a personal brand for myself. Then fast forward to 2019, I left Refinery29, went off on my own, signed with a talent agency, and just kind of became an independent content creator like I do today, where I was building up my own platforms and spending all my time making content for myself instead of a third-party brand. And here we are today. I've kind of taken my audience through my whole life's journey at this point. Some people were definitely with me in those early days when I was just dating my boyfriend, who is my high school boyfriend. And then we got engaged, we got married, we moved multiple times, we had a kid, moved to the suburbs and left the city. And now here we are, we live in the suburbs. We have one son who's 2.5, another baby on the way. And I've just been working on building up my business. And yes, as you said, I launched a podcast recently, which is my latest venture. I'm trying to expand into this new area, which I personally, as a consumer, love. I love and live for podcasts. So I wanted to start a new show that was really just a little different from most of the standard chatty lifestyle podcasts that I listen to. And I wanted a show that just asked guests questions that they're not often asked. So the real theme of the show and the format is bringing people on to talk about the three most taboo topic pillars of sex, money, and mental health. And as you know, if you listened, the questions can get super uncomfortable and invasive. And, you know, my goal with the show is not necessarily to get people to spill uncomfortable facts about themselves. I don't want my guests to just be uncomfortable the whole time, but I want to have as deep of a conversation as possible where I really see where their boundaries lie and how much they are willing to share. And I want to give my listeners a very voyeuristic listening experience.
Yeah. And I feel like that's exactly what it is. I was just telling my boyfriend before I started recording with you, I was like, I kind of want her to be interviewing me. I was like, she's such a good, when you listen to your podcast, you do.
Oh,
you
I can ask you questions. I'm sure your audience would love for me to ask you those.
You ask like direct questions and it comes out so naturally. And at most of the time, I mean, I don't know like how it goes behind the scenes if you have to like cut some things, but like most of the time, it seems like people are so open to talking about these things.
I've definitely had to cut things. I've actually had a couple of guests come out to me.
Oh my God, like on the
and
recording?
Then ask me to cut it. Yes. I won't share who, obviously, but and then ask me to cut it later. And then there have been also other things that have come out that they then ask me to cut. And what I've recently started doing is sharing with my audience. I'll sort of pop in and do these interstitial talking points where I reflect on the conversation we had. So my most recent one was in an episode where a guest asked me to cut something. I popped in and I was like, I just want to share with the audience here that we had a conversation that the guest asked me to not air. And I'm not going to tell you what it is, obviously, but I just want to share that there was a boundary that was crossed and the creator then came back to me and asked me to cut it. And I just think that's interesting for them to know, even if they don't know what it's about.
Yeah, I think it is too. So far, I listened to, you did a solo episode that everybody should listen to that was about every salary you ever made and the rent you paid. So that was so interesting to me. And then I listened to your first guest episode with Mike Johnson.
Yes,
so
such a good
one. Those are both really, really good.
Yes, love those. And they honestly are just getting better and better. One of the really fun elements of the show, I think, is that every so often the guests are just my listeners who are calling in to share almost like secrets, super taboo stories. Sometimes they want to be anonymous. we've had to change voices. Other times they're just comfortable showing their face and sharing their names. But I'm having, you know, amazing guest listeners come on and talk about everything from, we have an episode coming out where someone's talking about how she just gave birth to her second baby in the car.
Oh my God.
And her toddler was in the car with her when it happened. So pretty crazy story. I have another guest episode coming out with this 45-year-old woman who her son is off in college now, and she and her husband just sold all of their life belongings and moved into an Airstream and are traveling the country.
Oh my God.
And it's just like really interesting stories that, I mean, some of them are taboo in that you either would rarely get the chance to hear them. Others are just cool, interesting topics that you would want to listen to.
Yeah. And those three topics, sex, money, and mental health, growing up, were those taboo topics for you? Like, did you feel like people weren't talking about it as much, either like at home or within your friends?
I definitely feel like those are just the three topics that seem to be, I mean, obviously there are other taboo topics like religion, politics.
Yeah.
For me though, I feel like the sex, money, mental health are just the most applicable to everyone almost all day, every day in our lives. And not that I grew up in an environment where it was super taboo, but I remember certain nights of my life or certain days in my life having these deep, almost heart to hearts with people that I knew about these pillars. And those conversations are always my absolute favorite conversations to have. Like, those are the conversations I will stay up all night and forego sleep to be entrenched in. And they just happen so rarely. And they're some of my favorite deep chats. And when people get real and really open up, I kind of feel like I've always been an open book with my friends, but especially with certain topics like money, it is interesting because my whole friend group, we never opened up about salaries or money. And I know all my friends listened to that episode. And actually one of them reached out to me the other day and was like, I'm feeling called to tell you my salary. And we just had a whole open chat about her salary and bonus. She's been in the same job for 8 years. I never asked. I never thought it was okay to know that. And it's just interesting. Now I feel like we connected on this new level. But above all, my reason for specifically with the money, I just feel like our whole culture puts too much emphasis on how much money people are making. Like, it feels like it's such a big deal. And I know that it is important to get by in the world we live in, but I almost just want the conversation to be calmed down a little. Like, if we talk about it, it's not as big of a secret.
Yeah, I agree. Like, if it was just a normal thing to talk about, I don't think people would care as much. But because there's so much secrecy, it's like, it does feel like such a big deal.
Exactly.
And I'm with you too. Those are the types of conversations, all those topics where I feel like I'll just stay up all night to talk about it. And that's like this podcast, I don't know if you know, but I started as like a joint venture with one of my best friends. And the reason we started it was because that was kind of how we bonded, that we became friends in like mid to late 20s. And it was like the reason we became so close so fast was because like one of the first times we hung out, for some reason, we both were just like, so like an open book about all of these topics. And we were like, our friends like don't really talk about this. So then we really like bonded so quickly. And then we wanted to do something similar to you, where we're just able to talk about anything and invite people into that conversation.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like there are so many listeners out there who also would love to have those conversations, but maybe just don't have the people in their lives to have them with.
Yeah.
So at least in this case, they can either call in and have it with me or just listen and pretend you're having a coffee chat with friends.
Yeah, exactly. So you mentioned that you married your high school sweetheart, and I feel like I need to dive into that a little bit. Yes. So were you guys together like straight through?
So yeah, we started dating in 2009 after being friends since 2007. And we had a little hot second where he was a year older. So when he was going to college and I was going to be a senior in high school, we had a little moment of, I mean, to tell the story, he wanted to stay together when he went to college. And I, at that point, wasn't sure if I was going to want to stay together the following year when I went to college. So I didn't want to make him waste a year of his life. So I sort of convinced him that we should break up. And he was really sad about it, but of course, wasn't going to convince me that we should stay together. So we agreed to break up. But then before he left, I had a total change of heart. And just like after months of him prepping for us to break up, I totally changed my mind. And I, at this point, to be honest, felt like I had him wrapped around my finger. So I thought I could just tell him, you know, the day before he left, by the way, I want to stay together, surprise, and it would all be great. But I pulled that on him and he was like, what? You told me for months that you wanted to break up. And I prepared for that. And now we're breaking up. Yeah. And so we ended up going into his freshman year broken up, but it lasted for 10 days.
Oh my God.
he went to orientation at school and like hooked up with some girl and called me upset. And we just got back together. And I was, you know, it was one of those situations where I had no anger that he like was with someone else because we weren't together. So
yeah.
You know, it was fine, but I was just so happy that he wanted to get back together and I did too. And ever since then, we've been together. And then we went to different colleges. So 5 years of being in a long distance relationship and just kind of balancing who's coming to whose campus during which season based on what activities each of us has going on. And we made it through. I think one of the ways we made it through was knowing that we were only looking at jobs in New York after college. So we had a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. So it was like, so then he graduated college a year before you. And did he move to New York then?
Yes. And he moved to New York. And then the next year I joined him.
Okay.
And we lived apart for a couple of years. We both lived with friends for a couple of years and then moved in together.
And that 10-day break, that was the only time either of you was like ever with anybody else in any capacity?
Yes. I mean, aside from before we started dating, right. When we both were, you know, never had anything serious. Like we both are each other's only sexual partner. But
okay.
I had like hookups and hand jobs and all the classic boyfriend stuff before that.
Yeah. Wait, so within like your friend group, is anybody else married to their high school sweetheart or does everybody have very different dating journeys?
No one in my immediate friend group from college or high school is still with their high school sweetheart. I do know a bunch of people now from my adult life that happen to be with their high school sweethearts, including some other creators, but no one in my real life. And yeah, no. My parents are, so they were a good example for me. Yeah. But I didn't have a lot of friends that were in the same boat.
Yeah, I feel like it's very rare. I mean, I'm sure for so many reasons, but it's so cool because one of the things that I always am so impressed by when somebody has been with somebody for that long, like since you were that young, is that I'm sure you're in a lot of senses a different person than you were when you guys met. And so you guys have like evolved so much together instead of separately.
Yes, we've definitely seen the other grow so much. I also just did a Q&A on my podcast. It hasn't even come out yet, but someone asked the question of, do you ever regret that you haven't had the opportunity to be with someone else? Or, you know, how do you feel about having been with him the whole time? And I really thought about it. And I remembered, you know, when I was in college, I remember going to frat parties and literally on the spot at the parties, a guy would come up to me and I would say, I have a boyfriend. He doesn't go to this school. And they would say, don't you feel like you're missing out? You know, don't you want to see what else is out there?
Yeah.
And I realized that I don't know if everyone in a long distance relationship has this mindset, but I think the unique mindset that I had that really makes me have no regrets is when I was in that time period, I very much had my eyes open. I was going out. I was very social. I didn't stay in and sit in my dorm room and say, I don't want to meet anyone. I had tons of friends, tons of guy friends that we were working on projects together in extracurriculars. I met a lot of people. And I, at that point in my life, although I loved Michael, I was definitely looking out for myself first. And I remember saying, if I meet someone, and he said the same to me, like we were both just so open. If we meet someone that starts as a friend that we think we can see a better future with for ourselves than the other, we're not just going to stay with each other because we've been together for so long or because we're friends with each other's families and it's a sunk cost. Like, I want to be happy more than I want to just make you happy by staying with you. And really, I had my eyes open and I never found anything that felt like I wanted to explore it. By all means, if I did, I would not be with Michael right now. But nothing came my way that was better, I felt, for me than he was. And that's really why we're still together. And then, of course, today, like, I don't feel that way anymore. You know, being married now, I feel more like I'm closed. I'm a closed door.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for other options. And now I care about him like the same amount that I care about me. But back then I really cared about myself more. And if I liked someone else, I wasn't going to ignore it for him.
Yeah, I think that's such a good answer. You didn't miss out because you were out doing all the same things that you would have been doing if you were single, aside from like you weren't dating other people. because you didn't want to, but it wasn't like you were completely closed off. And it's not like you were at the same school, living together, hanging out every day. Like you had that long distance, which I feel like might be a piece of it that would really help in that scenario. Otherwise, you might be held back.
Yes. I also have a twin sister, and we feel like we went to college together and we lived together all 4 years with friends and whatever. But we always felt like when we are together as a pair, in that not physically together, but when we are have home base in the same place, like in this case, when we go to the same college, it then gives us such a comfort and freedom to branch out and explore and be our own people. Mm. Whereas if we had gone to different schools, I feel like we would just be constantly trying to get to each other and maybe wouldn't be able to like root ourselves down where we were. And I almost feel with the relationship, it's like the fact that I had him and we were dating and felt so solid and secure in our relationship, it allowed us each to really dive in to our own campuses and our own activities and just be so present. Whereas if he had been my college boyfriend, I might have just nested with him in my room and not done as much as I did in school.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And I'm really happy that you brought up your twin sister because I'm a twin also. And all ready to talk to you about that. So
Yes, we have so much twin stuff to talk about. Much.
Are you guys identical?
No, we're fraternal. What about you guys?
I thought so from looking at like your pictures and everything. We're identical. But we went to two separate colleges. I went to Ithaca and she went to FIT in the city. And then a year in, I transferred to Hunter in the city. Uh-huh. And like, it was very similar. Of course, there were other elements that went into it. Like when I would come and visit her in New York, I would be like, oh my God, I love it here. Like it was like the whole energy of the city that I was like, I want to be there.
Right.
But it was also, we were like planning visits to each other. We always wanted to be like seeing where the other one was. Yeah. And then once I was here, we lived together for a portion of it, but we were still like having our separate lives, which I feel like was helpful because we had that security of like, we were kind of together too.
What kind of career, if any, does your sister have?
She works at PureWow Gallery Media Group.
So you're both in media.
Yeah, we're both in media. We had very similar early career paths and then kind of like went separate ways. But we have like very different personal paths where like relationships and everything, where she is married, has two kids and lives up in New Paltz where I'm from. And I've been with my boyfriend for a year, but I was single most of my 20s until early 30s when I met my boyfriend like a year and a half ago. So like we've had those differences as well. So I'm curious to hear about you guys on that end also.
Yeah. I mean, especially with me having been with Michael since we were teens, we really always felt like it was the three of us. Like we called ourselves the three musketeers. Yeah. She was definitely a third wheel of our relationship for a long time. And, you know, she had a ton of boyfriends just in and out, but was very picky and, you know, would break up with people left and right. And especially in college, you know, she found it hard to find the right person. And I think she probably opened up more to some of our friends than she did to me, just about how much pressure she felt, because there was no pressure, you know, from me or from my mom or family or anyone for her to find someone. But I just think naturally being that third wheel for so long, it's more so I think she felt this internal desire to have what she saw that I had and was finding it hard to find that. And she definitely, you know, she was single with dating people on and off all the way into her 20s. And she actually just got married this past December. So when she's 31 or whatnot, and meanwhile, her twin already had a child at that point. So we were definitely on different timelines. But I think we were taught from a very young age, whether it was our parents or whatnot, to not ever be competitive with each other, especially as twins. I think our parents just did such a good job at individuating us and not pitting us against each other in any way. And we never felt that rivalry that a lot of twins report.
Yeah, we're the same way. And it's funny when I hear you describing all of that, it's like very similar. I was the third wheel for her and her now husband for like forever. And I was also like, I was in relationships like here and there. And I had like sort of a similar experience where it was like, nobody was pressuring me or like, oh, Jordan's married, why aren't you? Like I wasn't getting any of that. But like, because I saw how happy they were, I would think like, oh, I want that. And then maybe it made me a little pickier. But then another thing is like, I feel like I'm so close to her husband now because we had those years. So does she ever, or you ever feel like, how are you ever going to be that close with her husband? Like, do you have that relationship too?
I mean, she is so close with him. She's also really close with my husband's sister, who at different times in her life, like she was going through boy troubles. And I think they sort of bonded with each other at that time, which is very special. With her husband, I don't know. I felt kind of like when I met him, they were just both out of long-term relationships with other people. Okay. And it happened very quickly in the scope of life. I mean, they were engaged or they were dating for longer than a year or so before they actually got engaged, but definitely faster than it had happened with any other boy before her.
Yeah.
And I just kind of, I feel like we are on this wavelength where if the other person likes someone or has good things to say about someone, it's just a immediate love from the other twin towards that person. And that's actually been like something that's happened with us, with friends, not just boys, but, you know, through the entirety of our college experience, we were in very different activities and extracurriculars. And for example, I was in an a cappella group with these like really artsy, you know, drama club type kids who are not anything like my sister. But if I came home and I was like, I love Carly from this group, like she is the best person ever, it's like immediately she's really close to my sister. And my sister feels like a sense of connection to her. So I just think I felt that way with her fiance, now husband, right away because they clicked so fast.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I feel like Jordan and I had similar situations or like feelings around each other's friends and partners.
One thing that is different for us is the careers. So she works in finance and has a very different job.
Okay. Yeah. So that's like such different paths.
Yes.
Have you ever had either one of her boyfriends or one of your friends' partners that you didn't like that you had to tell the friend or like any conflict in that area?
Never with my sister. I've always felt like she's, you know, had good relationships. And if anything, I was definitely trying to get her in the earlier days to be more open-minded. I felt like she was, especially seeing my relationship with Michael, I felt like she was looking for something so specific. And I was just able to zoom out and have more perspective and be like, there are all types of people, you know, you could be happy with all types of people. And she had a very specific idea of what she wanted. So if anything, it was the opposite. With friends, I mean, definitely throughout college, there were some college friends that had various tumultuous moments in their relationships. And it was definitely something that, you know, my other friends and I would somehow get involved in and try to talk them out of it. But I'm happy to report that every single one of my college friends is, some of them are still not in relationships, but the ones that are married and settled down have picked good eggs.
Yeah. That's just college stuff. It's the normal college
thing. Yes, it was all in the past. There were definitely some rough moments and weird living situations with, you know, when you live with a friend and then you can hear that, how they interact with the partner. Alarming moments for sure, but everyone's past that and with good people.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I want to rewind a little bit when we were talking about you and your husband. And you said when you moved to the city, you lived with friends for a little bit before you guys moved in together. So I like hearing that you did have like some of that separation, even though you guys had been together for so long. And one of the questions that I get asked constantly is how to maintain like a sense of self or independence when you're in a relationship. So was that something that you ever had to like actively do, or did that just come naturally to you?
Well, the choice to live alone at first, I would say, was more just a product of our age and us kind of feeling like societally it wasn't accepted yet or acceptable yet until we were a little closer to wanting to get engaged. And I mean, I think we were just kind of following what most other people our age did, even other people in long-term relationships. Like my husband had a college friend who was dating his high school sweetheart who happened to go to their school too. And they both, I think, didn't even live together right away. And even though they had gone through 4 years of college together and probably spent many nights together in college, once they got to the city, they each chose to live with friends first. And so that just kind of felt like a given immediate circumstance. And then it took us, we probably waited 2 years before we found our first joint apartment together, which was just such a delight to get to move in together. I mean, if for no other reason than the convenience of not having to bring my retainer and my contact lenses and toothbrush back and forth multiple times. I mean, there were certain things I would leave there, but there were other things that I needed every night that I would have to tote back and forth.
Yeah.
And especially like he had a job in finance at the time and was waking up very early and had to wear suits and ties. So he had to be prepared with what he was bringing over. He didn't have a whole closet of suits and ties in my apartment and his.
Yeah.
So it was just a lot of coordinating. And so it definitely made it more convenient. But I loved those couple of years because it was a really nice time to get to just be in my 20s, living in the city, spending time with friends. And it was nice to start learning how to incorporate him into my adult life.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then when you lived together, were there any that you can remember, any big changes to the relationship in terms of like intimacy or like having sex less or things like that that happened when you did then like mold your lives together?
Probably. I can't really remember, you know, frequency of things, but
yeah.
I will say like when we were in college and we visited each other, it was just a sex fest. Like
yeah.
It was nonstop, multiple times in one weekend, like so much buildup for these moments, which then made us feel in the city like that's what spending time together would be like. But it definitely lessened even when we were in the same city, let alone living together. You just realize that now I'm just going through my normal daily rhythms, waking up, my morning routine, going to work, spending time with friends, cooking dinner. Like it just feels a little bit less urgent to get sex in. And so I would probably guess that it definitely slowed down frequency wise, or at least like intensity, passion-wise.
Yeah, I could see that.
But yeah, I think we always were able to keep open lines of communication about how often the other person felt like they wanted to be doing that and making sure that everyone's like love languages were being accommodated.
Yeah. So that kind of segues me because I wanted to ask about conversations to have with your partner and ways to create those open lines of communication. So did you guys always have an open dialogue about sex and about like money? Like, did you share how much money you were making with him or those conversations that came naturally to you guys?
Yes. I'm also incredibly blessed with a man that, as I've learned just from having multiple recent conversations, every time I describe Michael and his personality and the types of things he says or asks me, a lot of times people will tell me that like that's a lot of times the women will tell me that that's who they are in their relationship. Like it's the female energy of the relationship. And so I do feel lucky in that sense that I feel like he as a partner has always been the way, at least in my perception, a lot of people like want their man to be and are themselves in terms of being extremely emotional, very, you know, verbal and communicative. And if anything, I'm the one in the relationship who isn't as vocal about thoughts that are going on in my mind. I really rarely cry about things, and he's just anything could make him emotional.
Yeah.
And so he's always been that way. And from the very start, I think that just led to very open dialogue, specifically during the long distance relationship. Like you cannot be in a long distance relationship if you're not being clear about how you feel. And during those early years, he struggled a lot with the distance. I was like, this feels great to me. Like I'm super happy and this distance is actually good. Because like I said, all the positive outcomes of being on your own and getting to be individual. And he was definitely going through more of the struggles of maybe what you would assume a girl would feel of jealousy and confusion and stress. And we had to really work through those together. There was one moment in our relationship I remember early on in the college time, my freshman year. I think it was around Halloween. I was like wearing a slutty costume and going out, and he definitely kind of shut down and I was like, what's wrong? And I noticed there was a sense of jealousy or upsetness that I was going out with my girlfriends wearing what I was wearing. And I remember just saying to him, I totally understand that this is how you feel, but I'm not going to be able to have a relationship with a partner who feels jealous of this. Like, I know in my head how committed I am to you. I would literally never cheat on you. And I need to be with someone who just doesn't think twice about that. And if that's not you, just please tell me.
Yeah.
And if you think it could be you, tell me. And he like really thought about it for a good few minutes, like in silence on the phone. And then he, I guess in that moment, made the decision that even though that's like so not who he was, he could become that person for the sake of the relationship. And it really felt like a switch flipped in that moment, because my memory, at least, is that for the next 4 years of college, I never once felt like I had a boyfriend that was jealous in any way, like any way at all. And now in our adult life, like forget about it. There's no sense of that in any way, shape, or form, including my whole foray into Refinery 29. I worked with a lot of men, was like really yeah. close with my videographers. They would come to my apartment all day while Michael was out at work, and we would film me in my bathroom, taking shower, brushing my teeth, like really close with these men. And he never expressed anything but like appreciation and love for these guys for being my friends. So that was a big, I would say, a big positive point of communication.
Yeah, that's such a good example, because it shows that it's okay. Like I always say this, it's okay if something like makes you jealous. It's okay if you would say that you're like a jealous person yeah. or like whatever, if you're sensitive, these things that like have like a negative connotation, like it's okay to be able to tell the person that you're with, like this makes me jealous or this makes me sensitive, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's also okay to say like, I'm not going to be able to be in a relationship with someone if these things bother them. And then it's kind of like on the couple to figure out like,
yep.
okay, so where do we go from here? And if you don't have that conversation, then that's when you just have the same issue over and over again.
Yes. And I was not going to, you know, every Halloween or every weekend night, I wasn't going to be sitting on the phone, spending my time trying to convince someone that I was trustworthy.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Like, thankfully, he like really did shift after that conversation, because we might not have been together today.
Okay, I want to shift into talking a little bit about balancing being a mom with being a full-time entrepreneur and then also yes. being a wife and all of these things.
Very topical. I don't know if you saw my post today.
Yeah, so I was going to tell you to talk before about this. It. Can you, you shared yes. a recent reel and it got a lot of like mixed feedback and a lot of mm-hmm. commentary. So can you tell everybody a little bit about what that was about and
yes.
the response you got?
So I feel I have this constant dialogue in my head that is, should I lean into being a stay-at-home mom and just stop working? And by the way, I should caveat this whole conversation that I have the privilege in my life situation of being able to make this choice at all. Like if I wanted to stop working, although I have shared that I am the primary breadwinner for our family right now, I think my husband's income could theoretically sustain us. So I could stop if I wanted to, but I have this thought of, do I want to lean into motherhood and just stay at home? And I know that's such a hard job, but like spend all my time doing DIY activities with my son and baking food and just taking care of him and my future daughter? Or do I want to work full time and do what our situation is now, which is he goes to school 5 days a week and then 5 afternoons a week, he is full-time nanny. And I'm always going back and forth because, I mean, I grew up with a stay-at-home mom and I think I always thought I was going to work. Like I always knew I was going to have a job, but I think, especially in my later 20-year 20s, when work would be stressful or I'd be stressed out about something, I kind of do remember thinking, you know, maybe the time that I have a kid will make me realize that like nothing is important anymore except for the kid. And maybe all I'll want to do is be a stay-at-home mom. And if that is what's calling to me in the time, it just feels like that would be easier than working simultaneously. So I was like kind of holding out hope when I had the baby that I would want to just quit everything and be with him.
Or have this like certainty on one way or another.
Yes, just pick one side. But unfortunately, I mean, the thing is you can't, there's not really going hard in the other side, because the other side is like not being a parent. Like you are a parent.
That's true. So
it's either like really being with your kid or just working 5 days a week and having them be with childcare for the majority of the day.
Yeah.
And I thought I was going to feel one way. And then when he came, I just felt so strongly in the other way. And it has nothing to do with not wanting to spend time with him, but I went back to work after a little maternity leave that I gave myself. I went back to work 3 days a week and pretty quickly was like, this isn't enough. Like I have more I want to do. I have creative things that are calling me and I don't have time. And pretty quickly just realized when we move to the suburbs and we leave the city and we get a new nanny, we're doing a 5 day a week nanny and I'm ready for full time back to work.
Yeah.
And I posted this reel that was like my dialogue of, should we stay at home? I definitely over glorified what a stay at home mom does. Like I wrote, you know, we just want to garden and make homemade Cheez-Its, whatever. Things that you know, maybe I could do if I was a stay-at-home mom, but I don't think that's what my day would be.
Yeah.
But I posted this reel and then got a lot of commentary from people who just feel really strongly one way or the other about what a woman, specifically a mother, should do when they have a kid. And a lot of people have what I consider to be a bit of an outdated mindset about traditional gender roles in a relationship. And their real thought process is, when you have a baby, it is the mother's responsibility to 24/7 be the primary caretaker of that baby for those first early years of its life, maybe until the child starts going to school, at which point they become more independent, and then you can re-enter the workforce if you want to. But like, this time when you have young kids, it was your choice to have kids, and it's not your time to be in the workforce.
And people are like saying this in the comments.
Yes, like major, and you know, a lot of them are anonymous. They don't have pictures, whatever, but some of them do. And they're saying it in the comments, and they, you know, some people were reporting, you know, my mom worked and was never there for anything. And it, like, kids need their moms. They don't need their dads. They need their moms. Like, really, really different sexist, or I don't even know the word, but different thought patterns about the different roles. And it just really made me think. I actually tried to, I immediately was like, this doesn't feel like it aligns with my thoughts. Mm-hmm. But I tried to listen to this YouTube video that was further explaining it to see if I could maybe come around to it. And I found this YouTube video. The title is something like, "Why Women in Their 30s Are Having an Identity Crisis." And it was all about how our generation in our 30s grew up in a world where women working and women making equal pay and, you know, climbing up the corporate ladder was fostered. So we all went to like college and tried to get jobs and have been working towards these careers. Then we're hitting our 30s and, you know, on average, our 30s, and we're having our babies. And then at that point in our lives, we're feeling the quote biological pull towards nesting and motherhood and staying home and being whatever. Apparently it's a biological thing that women feel. I'm not saying any of this is fact. This is just the YouTube video.
Yeah.
But, you know, then we're feeling this biological pull, but we're at a crossroads because we've spent our whole lives building up to these careers. And a lot of us are actually equal earners to our partners. Many are even the higher breadwinner in the family. So now we're like at a place where either financially it's not feasible for us to pull back because we are making half the income, or we don't want to pull back because our identities are so wrapped up in our work that we feel like it brings us joy and passion, but we're still feeling the biological pull. So now we're just like having an identity crisis.
Yeah.
And it's like, I agree with some of that. Like, I definitely align with that. That's what I feel like I'm having internally, but it just really rubs me the wrong way that this crisis doesn't occur for men either. Like, or two, why don't men, it never once crossed my husband's mind, should I be a stay-at-home dad?
Yeah.
And it's, maybe it's just like societally, that's not what a lot of dads do. So he always was like, I'm always going to have a job and have a kid. And I just also felt like, well, I'm also always going to have a job and a kid. And now I'm realizing that I actually like having a job and a kid because I like doing work. I like my particular job. Maybe if I didn't like my job and had no passion and was going into a place I hated, I would feel like, you know what, I'd rather stay home.
Yeah. And I could see where that's like a huge part of it, because there probably are a lot of women who have a kid. And then when they think about going back to work, it's like, they didn't even like their job to begin with. And maybe when they think about like the cost of childcare and everything, it like doesn't even make sense. And like, that's a mindset that like, I totally understand. But like, when people are just so hard in one direction, feeling like this is what women should do, it's just, I don't know. I feel like it's like triggering for me. I'm like, what? Like, and especially when it's like on Instagram and you're leaving it like a comment, it's like, really, you feel this strongly about it that you're going to like,
I know. Well, the takeaway of my post today was, you know, on one extreme, people feel this, on the other extreme, people say that. And I just feel like there's no should. Women shouldn't do anything. There's not a right answer.
Yeah.
It's really about you as the mom making the choice after you have a child based on what you want to do and what you feel like works for you and your family. And I don't think that you're ever gonna, not ever, but like, you might not ever feel like it's perfect. You know, I think even though I have this flexible work from home entrepreneurial job that I love, I still sometimes don't want to do it and would rather be, if I hear my son in the next room, would rather go play with him. But then there are other times when I really do want to be engrossed in it and I do want to do it. And who is to tell me that just because I have a vagina and that I had this baby that I shouldn't be doing that at this moment, that I'm like doing something wrong and hurting my child in some way?
Yeah, I think it's so, it's crazy. And it's also like, if that's the mindset, then it also shocks me that like more companies don't have better paid leave for their employees. Like if it's that important that the mom is home with their kids, then like you should be paying them for at least 6 months for like to be home in that important time.
Another great podcast is on the Ezra Klein Show. There was a whole episode about, I don't even remember what it was called. I'll send it to you so you can put it in the show notes. But
yeah,
it was like the conflict, the deep conflict between our work culture and our parenting ideals. And it's basically like we just live, they talk a lot about how in Sweden, parents, both parents, men and women, get up to 8 years of their child's life of full pay, but only having to work like a percent, 60% of their hours or something.
Yeah.
And then that's not even to mention the actual like full paid leave that they get for like over a year after the baby's born. And here in the US, it's just horrific.
Yeah.
And it makes basically the whole point of it is like, it's not about paying people and incentivizing them to not work. It's just giving them the choice if that's what they want to do for their family to get to make the choice.
Yeah. I haven't personally faced this struggle before, but I think it's just a given that this is always going to be something that like, no matter what choice you make, it's always going to be a struggle and an obstacle. And I have four sisters and one of them is a stay-at-home mom. Two of them work full-time and one of them works part-time. So like they've all chosen different things and they each have—
And they all have kids?
Yeah, they all have kids. And they each have like the pros and cons of the choice that they're making.
You are a super aunt. I am. You've got a lot.
Yeah. So I'll be ready once I have kids, hopefully.
Yes, you are prepared.
On that note, so when you first got pregnant with your son, did you and your husband have a conversation about like how you were going to split up parenting responsibilities?
We did. I mean, we thankfully, I felt very secure and confident in the fact that he wanted to be a dad and was excited about it. And, you know, I think we went into it with him knowing that I was planning to go back to work. So we knew we were going to get some sort of childcare, some sort of help relatively early on. I think we first hired our nanny in the city when our son was like 3 months or 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so we knew we were going to do that. But I think especially because I went into that experience breastfeeding and I ended up nursing our son for 9 months, which just takes so much both physical and mental attention and scheduling and devoting your body and schedule to the baby. My husband absolutely was aware of that and worked really hard to, quote, compensate for like what he couldn't do and the ways he just physically couldn't help. Like he says all the time, if I could carry the second baby, I would. Or like if I could help you with breastfeeding, I would. But he literally can't. And so there's no use. Obviously, I felt like some standard resentment, but not actual anger or upsetness for him not being able to do certain things. And I feel like he just picked up a lot of the physical load that was able to be done. Mm-hmm. Like I would say he's changed way more diapers, probably like 50% more diapers than I've changed in my life. And he, if that makes sense, like for every, he's changing 2 out of 3 diapers. I don't know if that math made sense, but he changes most of the diapers. He, from the very start, we both talked about how I had seen some people on social media talking about how they felt like they couldn't leave their husband and go away for a weekend because the husband just didn't know what to do. Like they kind of hoarded the role as a mom and didn't let him in on stuff. And then he was ill-equipped to take care of the child. And I was like, this is not happening to us because I want to be able to do things and go places and you need to be able to handle it. And he was like, I want to be able to do it without you. Like, I don't want you to teach me or I don't want you to be texting me like instructions. And so we very early on, he just kind of dove right in with me. We both didn't know anything about babies.
Right.
We did not have nieces and nephews at that point. And we were the first of both sets of our siblings and just hadn't been around that many babies. So literally our baby nurse taught us how to like hold the baby and change a diaper. And we were so timid with the first bath. Like we were just learning together. And pretty, I think within the first 6 months, 7 months, I don't remember, I went on a trip. Maybe it was longer than that. But eventually I was able to go on like a 4-day trip to Mexico with a couple of my mom friends.
Yeah.
And it was just like walking out the door, I felt absolute calmness. Like, you know what you're doing. I've already also had multiple days when I'm like, I'm going to go to this yoga class at night. You got bath time. Like I didn't have to think of, is he doing it right? Or is he doing it my way? And that takes a load off.
Yeah, I can imagine. I love that. I feel like I do have some friends where like if the mom is going out, it's like, oh, so-and-so is babysitting tonight. And I'm like, what? It's kind of a strange mentality to have, but I do see how it can happen. But I also wanted to ask about, well, first of all, so now you're going to be having a girl, right?
Yes.
And you did you find out for your son as well what the gender was going to be?
Yes, okay. We did. And we thought he was a girl, like we very strongly thought he was a girl, and then he wasn't. And with this time around, we didn't have any intuition at all. Like we both had no idea.
Yeah. And did you like in the moment find out during that video that you posted?
Yes.
Oh my God, Milo that was so told cute. Us. I loved that. It was like, reveal. Open the cookie.
He took so long. I actually edited that video down. Like, believe it or not, it took like 5 minutes for him to get into that cookie.
That's so funny. Do you guys, have you talked about like, I'm sure you've talked about it, but if you'll share, do you think you'll have more kids or do you think two will be it for you?
I think two is it. Especially, you know, this pregnancy has been really rough, as was my first. But the very start of this pregnancy, even before we knew the sex, I was like, this is it for me. So
yeah.
Either we're having two boys or we're having a boy and a girl, and I'm not doing this again. And I always said prior to the pregnancy, I always said, if we get a boy next, we'll try again. And my reason wasn't necessarily to always because I like needed to get a girl, but I've actually, I don't know why I have in my head that I personally would rather have three boys than two, or same with girls, like three girls versus two. And I just always thought if I got two of the same, then I was going to go for the third. And so at the beginning of the pregnancy, I'm like, we'll see. And then I all of a sudden was like, I cannot do this one more time. So if it's a boy, we're done. And I think that kind of led to us, that led to me at least wanting it to be a girl more than I like thought I would.
Yeah.
Because I did ultimately envision that I could have a daughter. And, you know, I just like being a twin, I just like love girls and thought that I wanted a girl. And so I was just extra happy finding out it was a girl because it really just put a pin in me having to do this again.
Yeah. Did you ever hope for twins?
Oh, actually, as much as I love twins, I was kind of hoping against it because I just, I don't know if like mentally, I feel like Michael and I feel like at capacity with one. It took us a really long time to even feel ready to try for the second.
Mm-hmm.
And like the house we bought is actually not super conducive to three kids.
Okay.
Because we both work from home. So like one of the bedrooms is Michael's office. If we had a third kid and they all ultimately got their own rooms, like Michael would have to find another. We had to like expand the house or move.
Yeah.
And we love the house. So we were kind of like, we did buy a house that's like two kids mostly. And at one point early on in the pregnancy, when I got my HCG level tested, it was really high. And the doctor was like, that could be a sign of nothing, or it could mean that you are having multiples, but don't worry. If you don't have twins running in your family, I don't think it's worth thinking about. And I was like, oh shit, I am a twin.
Yeah.
But honestly, it's not really like, I don't know about your family. It's not genetic in my family. Like we don't have other twins.
Yeah, we don't either. I think like all I know is that I want them to have a sibling of some sort.
Yes.
Like I would want more than one.
Definitely.
Just growing up with siblings, I think that's important.
That's how I felt too. And my husband, I think like it worked out exactly how he plotted it because he is one of two and it's a boy and a girl. And he like loved that family unit of mom, dad, boy, girl. And that's like exactly what he produced. And I had mom, dad, brother, twin girls.
Yeah.
So like it was either going to be his situation or mine. And yeah, once I found out it was one, I was just relieved because I didn't want to go into a high risk pregnancy.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So when are you due?
September.
Okay, amazing. Well, congratulations. Yeah, I have like a million more questions, but I feel like we dove into a lot of them. I want to end with two really quick listener questions if you have time.
Yes.
Okay, so the first one, okay, this person asked what to do to get out of my head during sex with a new partner. Sex is only okay so far.
To get out of your head. It's a really good question. Like really turning off the lights, like total darkness, put on music, and really just think of your body as like, this is going to sound so weird.
I like where it's going.
Like think of your body as just like a mass, like floating in the universe, and you're just like connected to like the universe around you, and just feel what's happening. Like don't think too much about who it is, what position they're in, and do I like them, and does that feel good? Like, just like let your body do it. I don't know if that's
helpful. Really good advice. It definitely is. I think like trying to tune into like what you're feeling and actually feeling it instead of like, yeah, like you said, like thinking about what the other person's thinking, or especially if it's a new person.
And if they're saying that this person is like, what did they say? They're just okay.
Yeah, sex is only okay so far.
So if I believe like if part of the reason it's okay is you need to tell them what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm just extremely vocal in the bedroom of like, don't move, move, move this way, move that way. Like, it's not going to feel good. It's like girls are so different from boys, men and women, in that the like, I genuinely feel like men can get aroused by
anything.
Like, the couch rubbing up against them by accident. And like for women, it's just such a mental process that you, if nothing else, you need to be like vocalizing physically what needs to be happening to get it to feel good for you. It's not just going to feel good from anything they do.
Yeah. And like they don't realize that unless you tell them that. So definitely be
they're
vocal.
They're like, oh, it just feels good. And like, no matter what way we're doing it, like, no, it has to be this motion, and every body is different. So like, I'm sure everyone has their own preferences.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too. Like sex is only okay so far. This is a new partner. Like also worth mentioning that that's like totally fine. It doesn't mean it can never be good.
Totally.
Like the more you talk about it and have that open dialogue, it could be really good. It's actually like
agree
probably more
that.
Normal than you think that it's not that good.
Totally agree with that.
Okay, one more. I met a great partner, but I still have a lot of time until marriage. I regret not dating more and now I can't go back. Interesting one for you to answer since you married your high school sweetheart.
Okay, so my question is, why can't you go back? Like, you're not engaged yet. You're with a partner, but you said you have a lot of time until marriage. If you are, I am the kind of person who feels like if you feel like in the current moment that you are regretting the partner you're with or a choice you made, this is an example of the person being like, it's a sunk cost.
Yeah.
They're saying, I've already been with them for so long. I can't go back now, but I'm upset, but I'm just going to keep going because we've been in it for so long. No, like you have so much more of your life ahead of you than the amount you've lived with this partner so far. So even if it feels like the end of your current world to get out of this relationship, I feel like you just don't want to be moving forward into your life with that voice on your shoulder telling you that you regret this and that you want to be with other people. By all means, if I ever wanted to be with other people, I would have been.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. And you can also relate it to so many other things.
100%. In hindsight, you're going to look back on moments in your life, especially now. It sounds like she's probably in her 20s. And you're just going to feel like, how could I have felt I was trapped at that point? Like, I would understand this scenario a little more if you had a ring on your finger.
Yeah.
Because then there's just like so much to, I'm not saying don't get out of it, but then just such a bigger deal of families and paying for weddings.
Yeah.
And I mean, the stage you're at now, even if you're like living together, nothing has happened yet.
Yeah, I agree.
So like put yourself first.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. This was amazing. I'm so happy we finally made
Thank you, Carly. This was so great.
Can you tell everybody where they can find you?
Yes. On Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, my handle is at Lucy B. Fink, spelled L-U-C-I-E. And then the new podcast is called The Real Stuff. And you can find it on Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen. And I think if you go to lucyfink.com/apply, that is the application form for being a guest on the show.
Okay. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Carly.